Okay, so this is the last chapter in Covey's book of the Seven Habits of Highly Effective People. So he titles it Sharpen the Saw. So he explains what he means here on page 299, the first page, the top of the page for us. He says, suppose you were to come upon someone in the woods working feverishly to saw down a tree. So you see this guy working really hard trying to saw down the tree. So what are you doing, you ask? Can you see, comes the impatient reply. He's impatient because he's so busy sawing the tree. He says, I'm sawing down this tree. You look exhausted, you exclaim. How long have you been at it? Over 5 hours, he returns, and I'm beat. This is hard work. Well, why don't you take a break for a few minutes and sharpen that saw, you inquire. Right? It'll be easier to saw down the tree if you have a sharp saw, so spend a few minutes sharpening the saw. It's worth the time. I'm sure it would go a lot faster if you did that. So he says, I don't have time to sharpen the saw, the man says emphatically. I'm too busy sawing. So that's the mashal. So sharpen the saw means to take a break, to take a little bit of time in order to refresh and to regain some strength, so that when you continue, you'll be able to do it, you know, with increased strength, and ultimately that'll be more effective, even in terms of time, that'll ultimately be more effective. So there's a Gemara in Bava Basra that says that if you want to prove that you own land, so you have to have used that land for 3 straight years. If you've used the land for 3 straight years and you claim that it's yours, so even if we know that, you know, 70 years ago somebody else owned it, the fact that you've been there for 3 years and you say that it's yours and that other guy sold it to you, or you don't know the other guy or whatever it is, so that's considered to be proof that it's yours. So it's a chazaka. Chazaka shaloshanim. So the Gemara says that those 3 years have to be consecutive. If you use it 1 year and then 7 years later use it for another year and then a few years later for another year, that's not going to work as proof. But the Gemara says that they have certain places, the Gemara calls them here in source 1, the Asra Demuvri Bagi, in places where they leave the land fallow for a year. So Rashbam explains, V'makom shenoagin lezroa shana, in a place where the custom is to plant for a year, u'lahovir shana, and then to not plant for the second year, shalova hakush asakarka, so as not to weaken the land. In other words, it's beneficial for the land if you don't plant it year 2, so then year 3 it's going to be a lot more productive. So, you know, landowners want to get the most out of their land, but it's still considered beneficial to not plant it year 2, even though they're losing out on an entire year's crops, because ultimately in year 3 it'll produce so much more. So that's this idea, that if you take the time to sort of refresh and to, you know, relax and to, you know, regain your strength, you ultimately produce more in the long run. And we know just Shabbos is really the best example for this. Rashi says, talking about Shabbos here in source 2, Shabbos Shabboson, Rashi says, Menuchas Margoa. I'm not sure how best to translate that, but it's something like very deeply restful. Like Margoa is like, it's more than just resting. It's a rest that's like a deeply restful rest. V'lo Menuchas Arai, and not just like a happenstance rest. In other words, Shabbos is not just meant as a pause, it's meant as a time to do more than pause, to really get like a deep, you know, a deep rest. And, you know, even though Rashi doesn't say explicitly the following, but presumably, you know, that gives the person the ability to continue working, you know, for the rest of the week, and that's what HaKadosh Baruch Hu sort of, you know, that was the system that HaKadosh Baruch Hu set in place, because Hashem, you know, recognizes that this is a necessity. Ah, that's good. So that the relaxing is like much more, it's not just a simple day off, it's much, you know, it's much more than that. Yeah, thank you. That's why I said I don't need to translate for this week, because, you know, everyone here speaks Hebrew better than I do, so we're good. So, fine. So Covey says here on page 300, Habit 7 is personal PC, which he defined in the first chapter as production capability, meaning to have the ability to continue to produce. So it's preserving and enhancing the greatest asset you have, you. The greatest asset that we have is ourselves, and sharpening the saw is preserving ourselves. It's renewing the 4 dimensions of your nature, and the rest of the chapter basically goes on to break down, you know, these 4 dimensions and to explain each one of them: physical, spiritual, mental, and social emotional. So the rest of the chapter basically goes through each one of those one by one, so that's what we're going to do also. And he says here on page 301, he says, this is the single most powerful investment we can ever make in life. Investment in ourselves. In the only instrument we have with which to deal with life and to contribute. In other words, ourselves are our only instruments. So we need ourselves to function in life. So investing in ourselves is the best possible investment that we can make. So the Mesillas Yesharim basically says this idea, but he's coming from the opposite direction. So it sounds a little more daunting coming from the Mesillas Yesharim. The Mesillas Yesharim is speaking about not getting excessively involved in excessive luxuries. But what he says is, here in source 3, the hanos ha'olam, the pleasures of the world, Ein ra'li sheyuro ela le'ezer l'siyua bilvad, are only supposed to be used by a person as a help and as an assistance. L'sheyiro nachas ruach v'yushev adas, that a person can have peace of mind. L'man yucha l'fanos ribo el ha'avoda hazos hamutaras alav, so that a person can focus on serving Hashem. So he's coming to exclude getting overly involved in luxuries. But ultimately, even though he's coming from the opposite direction, he's saying the same thing, that we're supposed to take pleasures from the world to serve, you know, to help us have the peace of mind necessary that we'll be able to serve Hashem properly. So that's basically saying we have to invest in ourselves and take care of ourselves and give ourselves the proper amount of pleasure that we need so that we can have this peace of mind in order to have, you know, a proper instrument ourselves to deal with life and to contribute through Avodas Hashem. And there's the famous story about Hillel here in Source 4 in the Medrash. Gomel nafsho ish chesed. A person who, you know, does chesed to his own soul, to himself, is considered to be a man of kindness. Ze Hillel hazakein. That's a reference to Hillel. Shebeshah shaya nifter mi talmidav. When he would leave his talmidim, hayem ahalech vahorech imam. He was walking together with his students. Amrilo talmidav. So his students said to him, Rebbe, reheichan atzaholech. Where are you going? Amrilohem. So he said to them, Rigmo chesed im hadei nafsanya. Begobesa, to do a favor for my host. So Amru Ro, Ko Yom Islach Afsanya. So he said, well, you have a host every day? Like, well, what do you mean by that? What do you mean you're going to do a favor for your host? So Amrahem, Hade Nafsha Arufta Rav Afsanyahu Begogufa, isn't my neshama like a guest inside my body? My body is like hosting my neshama. So this is the famous story that Hillel was going to the bathhouse. He was going to take care of his guf, and he viewed that as taking care of the guf that hosts his neshama. In other words, we have to take care of the instruments ourselves, you know, with that we use to live through life, you know, and to serve Hashem with our neshama. So that's the general overview of this idea of sharpening the saw. And now Kobe breaks it down into these four dimensions. So the first dimension is the physical dimension. So he writes here on page 301, the physical dimension involves caring effectively for our physical body, eating the right kinds of foods, getting sufficient rest and relaxation, and exercising on a regular basis. And then he goes on to explain to what that means, is exercising for endurance, for flexibility, for strength. So there's a great Gemara which actually tells us that Chazal were aware of the concept of exercise. I guess it's fairly obvious that if you do something frequently, you know, it's easier to do. But Chazal were aware that exercise is beneficial. There's a Gemara in Bava Metzia. The Gemara says here in Source 5, Amar Rava, Hai man de agar agure avidita. A person hires workers to do work for him. Ushrim avidita bepalga dioma. They finish the job in the middle of the day. So he thought he was hiring them for a full day's work, and it turns out they completed it early. So now what? So e isle avidita de nichamina. If he has work that he can give them to do that's easier than the work that he, you know, contracted with them, so yoyev lehu, then he can give them the easier work. That's fair, as long as they're not working harder than they were originally working. Inami de kavasa, or equivalent work, not any more difficult. Mifkad lehu, he can also ask them to do that. But the kashamina lo mifkad lehu, he can't ask them to do work which is more difficult than they originally agreed to do. That wouldn't be fair. V'nosin lehem scharan mashram, and he has to give them their full salary. So even if he has nothing else to give them, because anything else he would give them that he needs to get done is more difficult work, so he still needs to pay them their full salary. So the Gemara wants to know, why is that? Amai, why does he have to pay them their full salary? V'reisiv lehu kepoel batel. Let him pay them what's considered to be a poel batel, basically means how much would a worker be willing to take to not have to work. Meaning if you tell a guy, I'll hire you for a day for $100, so he'll say, great. If you tell him, I'm not going to pay you anything for the day, he'll be like, I need a livelihood. You know, I can't just not work.
Take what you get on unemployment insurance.
Exactly, right. So if you'll be willing to take whatever it is, $40 to do nothing, they would say, okay, to do nothing, I'll take $40. So the Gemara asks, why do you have to pay these workers their full salary if you don't have anything else to give them for the second half of the day? Why not pay them kapora bata? Right? So the Gemara answers, Kika amar Rava ba'achushe de mechuza. Rava was talking about the porters in mechuza. Di ro avdi chaushi. If they don't do work, they become weaker. So they would not be willing to accept anything in order to not do any work for the day, because it's harmful for them. They need to do their work to maintain their strength. So Chazal were already aware of this idea that exercise, you know, increases a person's strength. Now on my favorite topic, this is probably one of my most favorite sources, the Taz. The Taz talks about getting sufficient sleep. So he says, And sometimes there's pressure in yeshiva to stay up really late and to, you know, learn really late into the night. So this is a good taz to know. I like this taz. So he says, "The kavosei matinu shekosef haRambam al pasuk bechol derachecha da'eus." The Rambam writes on the pasuk that we should know Hashem in all of our ways. Tehainu, the Rambam writes, "Misha ochel v'shosef," person who eats and drinks, "umaade nafsho," and enjoys himself, "kedeshia bari v'chazak avodas Hashem yisbarach," so that he should be strong in order to serve Hashem. He gets as much reward as if he were fasting. So you eat and you drink and you enjoy yourself, as long as you're doing it to be strong to serve Hashem, get just as much reward as if you were fasting. Udvarim elu asmachta akra, and Chazal found a pasuk to point to with regard to this. The pasuk says, Shav rochem mashkime kum. There's no advantage to you to get up very early. Dehainu, sheyesh talmidei chachamim, menadadim sheina meyeneyem. There are some talmidei chachamim who drive sleep from their eyes, and they learn a lot of Torah. There are other Talmidei Chachamim who sleep a lot, so they'll be strong, and they'll be able to, you know, put in the effort to be able to learn. The person who gets enough sleep, he can learn in 1 hour. It's what the Talmud Chacham, who stays up late learning and therefore has less sleep, will have to invest 2 hours into figuring out. The Talmud Chacham who gets enough sleep will figure it out in 1 hour. And for sure, both of them receive an equal reward, because they're both accomplishing the same amount of learning. Just one needs 2 hours and stays up twice as many hours, and the other one gets enough sleep, and therefore is able to figure it out quicker. Al Kain Amar, that's why the pasuk says, Shav Rachem, that there's no advantage for you to stay up late. Dehainu Bechinam Rachem, Shatem Mitztarim, Umashkimim Baboker, Umachre Sheves Baraira. The fact that you get up very early in the morning and go to sleep very late, Umematim Sheinosam, and minimize the amount of sleep that you're getting, Ze Bechinam. That's not for any advantage. Ki Kain Yitain Hashem Lidido Sheina, because Hashem gives sleep to his friends, to his beloved. Dehainu Misha Yoshein Harbei, a person who sleeps a lot, Kadesh Yechazig Mocho Batorah, that his mind will be strong to learn. No single HaKadosh Baruch Hu Chelko BaTorah, Hashem gives him his portion in Torah. Kemo Oso Shememayit B'Sheina, just like the one who gets less sleep, Umitztoyer Atzmo, and suffers. Ki HaKol HaLechach HaMachshav, it all depends on what a person's intent is. So as long as a person's intent is to get the sleep and to eat and drink and to enjoy oneself in order to be able to serve Hashem properly, so he gets rewarded just as much as the person who deprives himself of all that. So it pays to sharpen the saw. you go to sleep and you get rewarded for it too.
Is this what people use to justify not staying up on Shavuos night, or not related? So I know people are like, why would I stay up at night? I can't accomplish anything, but if I learn during the day, I can do...
Right. I think this would definitely support that. There are additional supports for that too. I think the Pele Yoetz says if you're not going to concentrate during davening, it's not worth it to stay up all night. Uh-huh. I personally know that I would fall asleep during the Haftorah, like, all the time on Shavuos, and I would stay up all night until I stopped staying up all night because I found that it wasn't worth it for me. And I think people also find that by the time Shavuos is during the summer, right? So by the time you're done with your meal and you get to the Beis Medrash to learn, so how much time do you have left before you daven Vasikin? Like 4 hours.
Right.
So if you go to sleep and you learn the next day, you can learn with 7 hours instead of 4 hours. So then the balance becomes, there's a minog to stay up all night. So on the one end is a minog, so that's the value of it. You know, in addition to the Torah, there's also a minog. On the other hand, it could be you're going to learn less by staying up all night, so maybe it's better not to. But I think this Taz would definitely support that point. Yeah. When I have to be careful, this is on recording, so I'll just say when one of my relatives was in yeshiva in Eretz Yisrael, that could be anyone. So. When one of my relatives in yeshiva in Eretz Yisrael.
It's not necessarily going to be posted. Just
once I'm recording I may as well post it. We'll see. Unless I say anything, then I decide not to. When one of my relatives was in yeshiva in Eretz Yisrael, they decided that they were going to be smart, and it was smart. They decided that instead of staying up all night, they were going to go to sleep, get a good night's sleep, and they were going to learn the next morning. It all worked out, except for the fact that they had the air conditioning on all night because people were there learning all night. The next morning, they turned the air conditioner off in the Beis Medrash because they figured no one's going to be there, everyone's going to be sleeping. So there he was trying to learn for 5-6 hours in the Beis Medrash that was boiling hot in the summer without any air conditioning. So it didn't work out as planned. But, yeah. Fine. Okay. So talking about exercise, Kovi writes here on page 303, he says, we need to be wise in developing an exercise program. There's a tendency, especially if you haven't been exercising at all, to overdo. And that can create unnecessary pain, injury, and even permanent damage. It's best to start slowly. Any exercise program should be in harmony with the latest research findings, with your doctor's recommendations, and with your own self-awareness. So I wasn't able to find an exact parallel in terms of exercise, but we certainly have a parallel when it comes to learning Torah. The Gemara says not to overdo it all in one shot. The Gemara says here in Torah 7, the Gemara in Erevin, Amar Rav Schora, Amar Rav Huna, Mai Dechsev, what does the Pasuk mean when it says, Hon Me Hevel Yim'at, the Kovetz Al Yad Yirbeh? So, I guess money that's acquired through Hevel, through nothingness, will end up being minimized, won't be successful, but if a person gathers a little bit at a time, Kovetz Al Yad gathers a little bit at a time, then it'll be successful, he'll increase it. So the Gemara explains, Im osa adam toroso chaviros chaviros. If a person tries to learn too much at a time, tries to learn 5 pages and memorize it all in one shot, you don't miss money. So he's going to end up not remembering anything. He's going to be left with nothing. Vimrav kovetz al yad yibah. A person learns a little bit at a time and reviews it, then eventually it'll add up and they'll know a lot. So it's the same thing when it comes to exercise. A person tries to do too much in one shot, so it's likely they'll be left with nothing. And left with nothing could be a good thing. They could be left with causing damage. But a person does a little bit at a time, then they build themselves up, and then ultimately, they have a lot. And then Covey just puts in a little twist here on page 304. He says, we were thinking, what's the best benefit of exercise? Physical fitness, that's the best benefit of exercise. So he says, probably the greatest benefit you'll experience from exercising will be the development of your habit one muscles of proactivity. As you act based on the value of physical well-being, instead of reacting to all the forces that keep you from exercising, your paradigm of yourself, your self-esteem, your self-confidence, and your integrity will be profoundly affected. In other words, now when I tell myself, I'm too tired to go work out, so not only am I not working out, but I'm also slowly but surely, inculcating into myself that, yeah, I'm too tired to get something done, and I'm not going to be able to do it, if a person actually goes ahead and does it, they're not only getting the benefit of the exercise, but they're even getting the benefit of, training themselves that, I can go out and be proactive about something that I have to do. Fine, I couldn't think of a Torah source for that either. By the way, in general, if anyone has Torah sources on any of these that I don't have on the sheet, please let me know. And next time around, we'll have an enhanced version. Mahadura Basra. Mm-hmm. Fine. So the next dimension that Kovi speaks about is a spiritual dimension. So he says here on page 304, the spiritual dimension is your core, your center, your commitment to your value system. It's a very private area of life and a supremely important one. It draws upon the sources that inspire and uplift you and tie you to the timeless truths of all humanity. And people do it very, very differently. And now he's going to explain 2 different ways people do it. He happens to be, Kovi himself is particularly religious, and he's a Mormon. So I find renewal in daily prayerful meditation on the scriptures because they represent my value system. As I read and meditate, I feel renewed, strengthened, centered, and recommitted to serve. Immersion in great literature or great music can provide a similar renewal of the spirit for some. There are others who find it in the way they communicate with nature. Nature bequeaths its own blessing on those who immerse themselves in it. When you're able to leave the noise and the discord of the city and give yourself up to the harmony and rhythm of nature, you come back renewed. You can almost imagine that, picture going out of town and it's just relaxing to think about. For a time, you're undisturbable, almost unflappable, until gradually the noise and the discord from outside start to invade that sense of inner peace. So the 2 things that people frequently will use for this, the spiritual dimension, either prayer, tefillah, or getting out of the city and being involved in nature, they're good makoros for. I apologize, this is the 2nd time that you're seeing this kuzari. I said this at the Midrash at Yom Rishon, but it's a good kuzari, so it's worth repeating. So the kuzari writes on the benefits that tefillah have for a person's day, he says, "V'tiyeh ha'esahi reiv zmano upilyo," that the time when a person davens is like the heart of his time and the fruit of his time. "V'iyu shari tosaf kidrachim hamagiyim el ha'esahi," and the rest of a person's time are just like ways and means to get to that time of tefillah. "Yis'ava kirvasa," a person desires Hashem's closeness. "Shebo misdame beruchniyim," v'yisrafik mehabahemiyim, he becomes more spiritual and distant from physicality. "V'yiyye priyomo v'leilo," and the fruit of a person's days and nights become ha'shosh ito sahim shel tefillah, the 3 times of davening. "U'priya shavua yom ha'shabbos," and Shabbos becomes the fruit of the week. "V'vneishu mu'umar lihidavik v'inyana eloki," because it's the time that Hashem set up to attach oneself to godliness. "V'avodaso b'simcha," and a person's service of Hashem is out of joy. "Ro b'kniya," and not out of humility. Kasher, humility has a positive connotation. Not out of subjugation, rather out of joy to serve Hashem. Kasher is bayar. "V'haseder hazem mehanefesh," this time for the neshama of davening, "is kaseder hamazon mehagof," is similar to the time of eating for the body. Mispala l'nafsho, a person davens for their neshama, v'nizo l'gufo, and is fed and eats food for their body. In other words, davening is like the food of the neshama. Umasmedes ala birkas atfila ad eis tfila acheres, and this benefit that a person got, like almost like eating, from the time of davening, from the time that they spent davening, will last until the next tfila. Kasmadas koach zudas hayomad shiyisod baraira. Just like when a person eats in the morning, that lasts until they eat again at night. So too, when davens in the morning, that lasts until they daven again at night. The choash yotirchak eis atfila mehanefesh. As the time of davening gets more distant from a person's neshama, he olefes v'koderes, a person becomes almost like darkened and distanced. The mashe pogeo v'samei iske ha'olam, as things from the world, you know, affect worldly things affect the person. So we see this idea that times of tefillah is a way to renew and to give strength for the rest of the day. Now, I wasn't able to find the following. I remember seeing it, but it was fascinating when I saw it. I can't pinpoint where it is. Rav Yitzchak Zilberstein, who's a big posek in Eretz Yisrael, he has a tshuva about whether or not a person should prioritize living in one place as opposed to another outside of Eretz Yisrael and Yerushalayim. So let's say a person says, I'm going to live in Chutz La'aretz. Is there, you know, any priorities that a person should have in terms of where to live? So he quotes a source. I don't know, I can't find it. I can't find it in Rav Zilberstein, and I don't remember where he was quoting from, that there's a value to live by a river.
By a river.
And right. I think that, so I don't remember, and I wasn't able to look it up, but it could be that the pshat is similar to what Covey says, that there's a certain peacefulness of, like, just watching the calm waters. And I'm wondering if this connection to nature, you know, is connected to that. First of all, if you live near a river, there's also, you know, there can be vegetation growing by a river because, you know, they need water to survive. So it just could be that the connection to nature is the value of living by the river. I don't remember for sure. So we have to see if we can find that. But who'd ever thought that there was, a priority in terms of where to live outside of Eretz Yisrael? But apparently there is. There's a value to living by a river, and it could be because of this connection to nature. I'm not sure. So the river was actually nature, right? If it's a polluted river, it doesn't...
It's a proof that they obviously didn't have a lot of problems with pollution in the water.
Right. If they did, you wouldn't gain much.
I'd be worried. You also by the Hudson River.
I would have mosquitoes, don't they?
Oh, that's true,
like,
too.
I would distance myself from a river.
That's true. You don't want to be too close to the mosquitoes. I would not want to be too close to the mosquitoes. That's right.
It's not because of the river. That's because I think a lot of bushes and vegetation and things that they feed off of.
Mm-hmm. So you got to find a solution to be both near a river and away from the mosquitoes.
No, there's nothing calming about water. I know, like, that's why people like going to Florida, you want to have a beach view room or something. Yeah. There's something about the waves or something about the water.
It is calming. I think that could be. I mean, that could be that's the reason why. I don't remember for sure, but it would make sense to me. So. Okay. It also doesn't, I don't remember it saying how close you have to be to the river. If the reason is, as we're suggesting here, you have to be close enough that you could see it, that you could, you know, benefit from that connection to nature. But I don't remember if that's the reason, so I have to check. You know, I just don't know how to check. I have to find it.
Sure.
That should be close enough. You could see it. Yeah.
And we were higher up topographically. You'd have to go down.
So if the pshat is as we're suggesting, so then that's good. That would be a fulfillment of it. Yeah. Fine. The following source I just put on because there's a great quote that I heard live from Big Talmud Chacham from Shmuel Kamenetsky, and it's just a cute quote, so I wanted to put this on. So Kobe writes on page 306, the idea is that when we take time to draw on the leadership center of our lives, what life is ultimately all about, it spreads like an umbrella over everything else. It renews us, it refreshes us, particularly if we recommit to it. So this connection to our leadership center, he says, spreads like... A leadership center, I think, but what he means by that is the spirituality, because he wrote in the previous source here on page 304, he says the spiritual dimension is your core, your center, your commitment to your value system. So he's saying that spirituality sort of spreads out like an umbrella and it refreshes us. It's just on the topic of spirituality being like an umbrella. It was actually pretty cool hearing this from Shmuel Kamenetsky, is well on in years. And he speaks, you know, very calmly and softly, and he's one of the heads of the Moetzes Gedolei HaTorah, so he's viewed as one of the great, you know, rabbinic leaders. So he said, Torah is like an umbrella. I would try and imitate him, but I'm not going to do a good job. But Torah is like an umbrella. It only works if you open it, and if you hold it over your head, and by that he meant if you respect it. So it's just a cool mashal. So Torah is like an umbrella. When you say to someone, Torah is like an umbrella, they're like, huh? And so Torah is like an umbrella. You have to open it, otherwise it doesn't work. You get all wet, and you have to hold it over your head. Fine. Okay, the next dimension that Covey discusses is the mental dimension. So he speaks about education. So he says here on page 307, education, continuing education, continually honing and expanding the mind, is vital mental renewal. Sometimes that involves the external discipline of the classroom or systematized study programs, but more often it does not. Proactive people can figure out many, many ways to educate themselves. It is so valuable to read broadly and to expose yourself to great minds. So that's reminiscent of the Mishnah in Kinim. This is actually the last Mishnah in this Seder Kodshim. So if someone makes a Siyam on Seder Kodshim, you get to hear this Mishnah. So the Mishnah says, Rabbi Shimon ben Akashya Omer, Ziknei Am Ha'aretz Kol Zman Shemaz Kinin Da'at Al Mitarefes Alayan. So the elders of people who don't study Torah, so as they get older, so their mind gets weaker. Shne'emar Meitzir Safar Ne'emonim V'tam Zekinim Yikach. That Hashem takes away the reasoning of the elders. Aval Ziknei Torah, but those who learn Torah, Einan Kein. So they're not like that. Ela kol zman shemaskinin, as they get older, da'at an misyasheves alayah, and their mind gets stronger. Shne'emar bishishim chachma v'orech yamim tivuna, that in the elders there's wisdom, and in the length of days there's understanding. So this idea of continued education, that if a person is involved in learning Torah, and I think part of the Mishnah is not just, it's not just learning, meaning I think there's a specific aspect to the spiritual quality of Torah, but it's both. It's both the fact that a person is continuously involved in education and the special spiritual quality of Torah that makes the person, as they age, become wiser rather than losing their reasoning. And then he talks about the importance of writing. He says on page 308, writing is another way to sharpen the mental saw. Keeping a journal or writing good letters or organizing and planning. So there's a cute Maharsha in Baba Basra. All the time, Talmidei Chachamim are referred to as sofrim. So why are Talmidei Chachamim referred to as sofrim? Sofrim are scribes. So the Maharsha explains, the Gemara says, Ashrei misha balakan v'talmudo biyado. Fortunate is the person who comes to here, meaning to the next world, with his learning in his hand. So what does it mean with his learning in his hand? So the Maharsha says, Yesh Rafah, here in source 10, Yesh Rafah ki ikar halimud, the primary way of learning, v'shanasib baroshem, so that it'll really, you know, have an effect, hu halimud haba miksivas yad, is the learning that comes from writing. The reason why Chachamim are called Sofrim is because the way that they attained their Chachmah was through learning through writing. I guess you have to concretize, you know, you sort of can think you understand something, but until you actually write it down, you know, you don't necessarily know that you got it. So that's why the Chachamim were called Sofrim. And then the last dimension here is the social-emotional dimension. So Covey writes here on page 309, the social and emotional dimension of our lives are tied together because our emotional life is primarily but not exclusively developed out of and manifested in our relationships with others. Renewing our social emotional dimension does not take time in the same sense that renewing the other dimensions does. In other words, you don't need to take, you know, an hour or two to renew the social emotional dimension. We can do it in our normal everyday interactions with other people. Just over the course of the day, interacting with other people is an opportunity without taking, you know, away, so to speak, too much time. To renew our social emotional dimension. So this connection between the social and emotional dimensions is reminiscent of quite a famous Gemara about Koniha Ma'agel. Maybe just for the sake of time, I'll jump into towards the end. But the story basically is that he slept for 70 years, right? And he woke up, and you know, he 70 years passed all of a sudden. So the Gemara tells us four lines from the bottom of this quote. Azal the Beis HaMedrash. So Choni HaMa'agel went to the Beis HaMedrash. Shaminu Rabbanan de Ka'amri. So he heard the Rabbanan saying, Nihirin Shmeitzin Kibishane Choni HaMa'agel. That the people usually pronounce it Choni HaMa'agel. It happened to be that one of my chavrusas in high school's father was very, you know, medactic with Hebrew and pointed out that Choni HaMa'agel means Choni the circle. And the point is that he was a Me'agel, that he drew a circle. So that's why I'm pronouncing it in this weird way, Choni HaMa'agel, because it was embedded into me like that, yeah. So anyway, so they said that the sugi that we're discussing in the base medrash is so clear, it's like the way it was discussed in the times of Choni HaMa'agel. To have a ayah a base midrasha when Choni HaMa'agel would come into the base medrash, ko kushya de havelu rabbanan havemefareklu. Any question the rabbis would have, he was always able to answer. So Amar Lehu, so Choni HaMa'agel is hearing this. So he says, Ananiu, that's me. V'lehanu, they didn't trust him. They didn't show him the respect that he deserved. So he felt weak. He felt, he was depressed. He davened to Hashem, and Hashem took his life. In other words, he just, without having anyone who would recognize him and show him the respect that he needed, he just wasn't able to function. Amar Rava, Rava says, Hainu damri inchi. This explains what people say, O chavrusa, O mitusa. Either friends or death. In other words, a person needs a certain social environment, social interactions for this emotional dimension. So fine. So then Kovi discusses the interconnectedness of these four different dimensions. Right, the four different dimensions were physical, spiritual, mental, and social emotional. So he says they're all connected. Here on page 314. Although renewal in each dimension is important, it only becomes optimally effective as we deal with all four dimensions in a wise and balanced way. To neglect any one area negatively impacts the rest. Right, so obviously, let's say a person neglects physical. So it's very nice they have all the other aspects, but if they're not healthy, so it's gonna be harmful. Or let's say they're involved in all the other aspects, but they're not involved in the mental aspect. So that's also going to be difficult if it gets harder for them to do things. So each one of these are connected, and they're all necessary.
Physical, spiritual.
Mental.
And emotional.
And social, emotional. Yeah. So first he says that you need all four. And then the next quote here from page 315 is that once you have all four, they each help each other out. So he says here on page 315, balanced renewal is like a lot of syllables in this line. Balanced renewal is optimally synergetic. I did it. The things you do to sharpen the saw in any one dimension have positive impact in other dimensions because they are so highly interrelated. Your physical health affects your mental health. Your spiritual strength affects your social emotional strength. As you improve in one dimension, you increase your ability in other dimensions as well. And then he says, and I just like this quote, it's not really necessary for this year, but it's like exactly what Rabbeinu Yonah says in Avos, and it is connected, and it's in this chapter, so I'm allowed to use it. So he says, we can't live without eating, but we don't live to eat. In other words, he's talking about how physical health is necessary for the other dimensions of life. So for physical health, you need to eat. So, and that's necessary for the other dimensions of life, but the point of living is not to eat. So that's exactly what the Mishnah says. The Mishnah says in Pirkei Avos, "Im ein kemach ein Torah." If you don't have flour, you can't learn. Im ein Torah ein kemach. If you don't have Torah, you don't have flour. So what exactly does that mean? We understand. If you don't have flour, you don't have food, you can't learn, right? What does it mean if you don't have learning, then you don't have flour? So Rabbeinu Yonah says, "Im ein Torah ein kemach, komar me akash ein bo Torah." If a person doesn't have Torah, ein to elas hakemach. Ola. So then the benefit of the flour is not really providing its benefit. She'ein adam mora ba'ashro, a person doesn't benefit through their wealth, al kadei she'yu tzorchei gufo mitzuyin. The only benefit a person gets in their wealth is so that their physical needs will be met, v'yu lo p'nai ra'asur fatoras, they'll have time to learn Torah, to be involved in spirituality. Meaning, a person needs the physical. Imein kemach ein Torah. We can't, as Kobe says, we can't live without eating. But we don't live to eat. In other words, the only value of having that osher, that wealth, is so that one has their physical needs taken care of, so that they can then live, so they can then get involved in the spiritual aspect of life. The next quote that I put here is a little bit demanding, so I'm going to be hypocritical because I'm going to read it and I put it on the sheet, but I don't do it. I'm not sure how many people do it. It's a lot. So he says here, the daily private victory, a minimum of 1 hour a day. He's already giving us numbers. A minimum of 1 hour a day in renewal of the physical, spiritual, and mental dimensions is the key to the development of the seven habits, and it's completely within your circle of influence. So he's saying we should be spending 1 hour a day refreshing and renewing ourselves in these three areas. I guess technically, if you count davening for spiritual, I get that, right? We all get that if we count davening as. So yeah, we could count that. Good, so we do get that. But otherwise, it would be pretty hard to get up to an hour a day. But we can count our davening as spiritual. And then I guess whatever we're involved in over the course of the day, we always have mental, meaning we're always involved in, you know, whatever it is, reading or something that we're doing, whatever we're doing, you know. So we get that. Physical, I guess, is the harder one, because that you don't run into anyways. But he says it should be an hour a day of these things. Back and forth from shul, yeah.
Or if you take a subway, you can take the stairs every time instead of the escalator, or like...
Yeah.
That's true. Yeah, you can find opportunities to do that, and yeah. Usually I take the stairs and I'm too lazy to wait for the elevator, even though the elevator would get me there quicker than the stairs, but I just feel like if I'm moving, I just feel like I'm getting there quicker, you know? But yeah, that would be an example. Like, we could take advantage of times like that. I think actually my Rebbe in YU, Reb Mordechai Willig, is always careful to do that, or not always, but frequently careful to do that, that his default is he always uses the stairs in the YU Beis Medrash building. And he uses the elevator sometimes, but I think in general he tries to use the stairs for that reason. Fine. Then Kobi moves over to talking about the fact that we get peace of mind from knowing that we're leading a good life and we're doing good and we're helping other people. So he writes here in page 310, peace of mind comes when your life is in harmony with true principles and values and in no other way. The only way to get to peace of mind is when you know that you're living your life the right way. And he writes here in page 311, I'm not sure who this person is, who he quotes, but he says, the late Dr. Hans Selye, I'm not sure to pronounce that, in his monumental research on stress, basically says that a long, healthy, and happy life is a result of making contributions, of having meaningful projects that are personally exciting and contribute to and bless the lives of others. So this idea that the true simcha is helping other people is a Rambam in Hilchos Yontif. The Rambam writes here in source 14, Uchshu ochel v'shoso, when a person is eating and drinking on Yontif, chayev rahafil, he has to make sure to feed lager, layosom, almana, right, the convert, the orphan and the widow, together with all the other poor individuals. A person who locks his doors, and just eats with his family, and doesn't feed the poor, and to those who are bitter, who are suffering. That's not considered to be simchas mitzvah, or simchas kreso, that's just the simcha of his stomach, that's not simchas mitzvah. The ikar simcha is leading a life of helping others. And the fact that I think I left out a quote here that I meant to put on. What I meant to do with source 15 here is there's a story with Rabbi Yisrael Salanter. I think I left out a Kobi quote before that. I should have put this. The next quote should have been before source 15. So let's just read it. Page 311, he says, whether or not we belong to a church or service organization or have a job that provides meaningful service opportunities, not a day goes by that we can't at least serve one other human being by making deposits of unconditional love. So he's saying two things in this quote. The first one is that a person through their job can have meaningful service opportunities. So this pasuk in Bereishis, Vayishalech Chanoch Eso Elokim, so Chanoch walked with Hashem, Veinenu Ki Rakach Eso Elokim. Hashem caused him to pass away early. So apparently there's a medrash, I couldn't find it inside, but I once read in the Sefer that Rabbi Yisrael Salanter explained the medrash on this pasuk. Apparently the medrash says that Chanoch was a shoemaker, and with each one of his stitches, he was thinking, you know, elevated thoughts. So Rabbi Yisrael Salanter asks the question, he says, one second, he's a shoemaker, he's going to sell these shoes. The buyer expects to get a good, strong pair of shoes. If he's busy thinking these elevated thoughts instead of thinking about the shoes, so he's going to be cheating the buyer. So why is Chanoch being presented as if he's such a tzaddik, he's thinking elevated thoughts while he's making the shoes? On the contrary, he's a thief. He's not making a good pair of shoes, and he's selling a faulty pair of shoes to the buyer. So Rabbi Yisrael Salanter explains, no, what it means that he was thinking elevated thoughts when he made the pair of shoes was he was thinking, how can I make the strongest and, you know, most optimal pair of shoes so the buyer will get the most use and the most pleasure from the shoes? That's what the Medrash means by elevated thoughts. All his thoughts were to make sure the buyer gets a good, strong pair of shoes. So the idea being that even though this was Chanoch's profession, he was a shoemaker, it was his profession, but it's considered to be elevated thoughts if the mindset that the person approaches their job with is that they want to, you know, provide this service and provide this assistance to another person. So it doesn't detract if it's the person's job. That doesn't take away from the fact that it's a chesed. As long as the person has the right kavana and the right intent, they still get credit for doing a chesed, even if they're getting paid for it. And then the second aspect that Covey mentions here is that even if a person's job doesn't involve, you know, these meaningful service opportunities, a person can always, you know, make these deposits of unconditional love. A person can, you know, benefit other people by, you know, just by demonstrating love towards them. The Gemara says here in Surah 16, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Tov ha-malbin shinayim l'chaveiro yoser mimashkeyu chalav, that a person who smiles at his friend, shows him the white of his teeth, literally, but who smiles towards his friend, is considered to be greater than having fed him milk. Shenemar reven shinayim mei chalav, al-tikri reven shinayim el-ribun shinayim, that showing him the whiteness of his teeth, smiling at him, is more valuable than feeding him milk. And the Gemara in Brachos talks about the value of just greeting someone. Anyone who knows that a certain person usually will greet them, you should make sure to greet him first. As the Pasuk says, you should run after peace. If the other person greets me and I don't reply by greeting him in return, nikra gazlan, I'm called a thief. That the HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives us Musar, that we stole from the poor. So Rashi explains, how could we steal from the poor? They don't have much to steal from. So he explains that what it means is that we didn't, you know, smile at them, greet them, you know, show them the proper respect. So you see that there's it can be of even greater value to smile at someone and to greet them than it can be to actually do a practical service for them. Fine. So in terms of complimenting other people and making them feel good and building them up, so Covey writes, most people are a function of the social mirror, scripted by the opinions, the perceptions, the paradigms of the people around them. We can choose to reflect back to others a clear, undistorted vision of themselves. In other words, we can help them view themselves positively. We can affirm their proactive nature and treat them as responsible people. We can help script them as principle-centered, value-based, independent, worthwhile individuals. In other words, the perspective that we have towards someone else, that we express that we have towards someone else, can help them define themselves in a positive way. I think I might have put the following on an earlier source sheet. I didn't put it on this one, but there's a famous line of the Kutzke Rebbe. He says that people frequently view themselves, view their own self-worth, as how they think other people perceive them. He says, Anima, I am, ma she'ani choshev, she'ata choshev, she'ani. I define myself, my value is how I think you view me. So it's not how, I should define my value based on the way God views me. That would really be the ideal. But most people mistakenly value themselves not based on how they view themselves, not based on how other people view them, but how they think other people view them. So you see from there the value of making it clear to other people that you respect them, because they're going to define their own self-esteem based on how they think you respect them. So, you know, it's worthwhile to be clear about how we respect them. And Rashi says here in Parashas Noach, the beginning of Parashas Noach, Kioschara isi tzaddik, right? Hashem says to Noach that he's a tzaddik. V'ro ne'emar tzaddik tamim. It doesn't say that he's a perfect tzaddik. Mikan, you see from here, she'omrim mikta shivcho she'odem b'fanav, that we praise a person partially in front of them, v'kuro she'o b'fanav, but we only give them full praise, you know, when we're not in their presence. So Rav Margolin, who is one of my sister and my wife's Rebbeim in Eretz Yisrael, in Mechara, he points out that people usually make the mistake of only taking one of the 2 points of Rashi. Rashi says, don't praise a person excessively in front of them. That's true. But he also says, and make sure to praise a person to some degree in front of them. Right? It's not just that we don't say kol shivcho b'fanav, it's also that we do say mikta shivcho shaladim b'fanav. And then Covey says, here on page 313, the more we can see people in terms of their unseen potential, meaning it could be that there's a particular individual who it's hard to show proper respect to, because the way we see them now, you know, they might not appear to be so great. But the more we can see people in terms of their unseen potential, the more we can use our imagination rather than our memory with our spouse, our children, our coworkers, our employees, we can refuse to label them. We can see them in new, fresh ways each time we're with them. I saw an idea in one of Rabbi Zalig Pliskin's books where he recommends that we put a date after a person's name, like whenever when we think about them. Meaning if a person did something wrong to us 3 years ago, we shouldn't view them as Reuven, we should view them as Reuven 2015. Because Reuven 2018 might be different than Reuven 2015. And if we have someone right now, Reuven 2018, let's say we don't think Reuven 2018 is such a great guy, it's not because Reuven is not such a great guy, it's Reuven 2018 is not such a great guy. But maybe Reuven 2025 will be a great guy. So that was his idea, and I think that's in line with this idea here too.
Who's
Rabbi Zelig Pliskin.
Is he like he's a Musa rabbi?
He writes a lot of personal growth books. Some of them are like small paperback ones, but he also has some longer books. I think his official position is he's the head of the counseling department for Eshat Torah, I think. I think that's his official position.
Right, he wrote a book, Summing Happiness. I'm just trying to remember the title.
He has Gateways to Happiness.
Gateways to Happiness, right.
Yeah, he has a number. He probably has, he has like close to 20.
Right.
He has a lot of them, yeah.
Yeah.
Fine. So, then the last section, which is almost, it's not so much related to this chapter, but it's more just his conclusion of the entire book, because he talks about inspiration. And he writes here on page 317, training and educating the conscience, however, requires even greater concentration, more balanced discipline, and more consistently honest living. It requires regular feasting on inspiring literature, thinking noble thoughts, and above all, living in harmony with its still small voice. In other words, we have to train our conscience, and that's done by reading inspiring literature, and by making an effort to live, you know, to live the right way consistently. So in terms of, first of all, it's a great way to say it, regular feasting on inspiring literature, a very positive connotation, feasting on inspiring literature, right? Like you could picture that big meal. The Mishnah Berurah says, Tzarecha, in source 19, Tzarecha adam likbo ro'eis l'lmot sifrei musar b'chol yom v'yom im'at v'im'harbe. There's an obligation for a person to study sifrei musar, books about personal growth, every single day, whether they have time to do a lot or only time to study a little bit. But a person has to read inspirational literature every day. And talking about building up the conscience requiring, you know, consistent effort and consistent honest living, there's the Gemara in Kiddushin, Amar Rav Huna, Kevan Sh'avar Adam Aveira V'shana Ba Hutshalo. If a person does something, the same thing wrong twice, the same Aveira twice, it becomes mutter for him. The Gemara asks, Hutshalo Sal Kedaita, if you think it actually becomes mutter, it doesn't become mutter. Alam Nazis Lo Keheta, rather a person sees it as being mutter, it's no longer something which is shocking to him. A person steals twice, the first time he steals, he thinks, I'm really doing something terrible. Once he gets used to stealing, it doesn't bother his conscience as much. So the idea is that in order to train and educate our conscience, it requires consistent, honest living, as Kovi says. Because once a person, you know, does something that's not right, so that blunts the conscience. Then Kovi writes here on page 317, once we are self-aware, we must choose purposes and principles to live by. Otherwise, the vacuum will be filled. In other words, if we don't make an effort to live the right way, so our minds can be filled with wrong ideas. There's a Rambam talking about how to avoid improper thoughts, and the Rambam says here in source 21, Gedola mizos amru, yifana atzmo machshavto ledivrei Torah, that a person who's trying to fight improper thoughts should think words of Torah, think about Torah. V'yarchiv da'ato b'chachma, increase his mind in wisdom. She'ein machsheves arayos miskaberes al b'leiv panim min ha'chachma, because improper thoughts only overpower a person when they're not thinking when they're devoid of wisdom. So that's this idea that if a person is not going to choose, as Kovi writes, choose the principles to live by and to focus on how he can grow. So if a person's not focusing on how they can grow, so that vacuum will be filled by less noble thoughts. And then Kobe concludes by saying that it's an upward spiral in growth. He says, moving along the upward spiral requires us to learn, commit, and add on increasingly higher planes, that as a person improves in personal growth, they're going to continue to want to improve even more, and it becomes an upward spiral, you know, as they enhance their life. And the Orchot Tzadikim writes a similar idea here in source 22. Shemigia adam umara Torah, a person reaches a particular madrega, ra'olam yachmod ra'os umara shiramara mimena. Then he's going to desire to reach an even higher madrega, ad shiagia ratachas atova, until he reaches perfection, uvaze yagia ra'olam hagmor shalom haba, and then he'll reach the world of reward, which is the next world. So once a person reaches a particular madrega, that sort of drives them to want to reach a higher madrega, and they continue upward.